Your touch has thrilled me like the rush of the wind, and your arms have held me safe from a rolling sea. There's always been a quiet place to harbor you and me.
Our love is like a ship on the ocean.
Welcome back to the Rodcast. It is a Top of the Charts Tuesday. That's when my co-host Patrick Davis, the Idillionaire, he plays jams that reached the top of the Billboard charts on this day in history. So we appreciate him and all of his efforts and energy and creativity for all the musically themed days of the week. Also, we appreciate Patrick coming up with the topic for the big fat poll of the day. This one has been quite the conversation starter. Patrick, let the folks know what the topic is for the big fat poll of the day.
Big fat poll of the day today. Who will win the Big 12 this year? We've got that up on the Horn ATX on X right now. Utah running away with it. Utah getting a ton of votes. We've got a comment that the Cyclones should not have left the Cyclones off. That he thinks it's not even close that the Cyclones will win it. K-State is third. Really? Oklahoma State second. And Colorado with 2% of the vote.
I would say the thing about Iowa, yes, people just hate, they just hate Dion and hate Colorado. But I'll say this about Iowa State. Matt Campbell is, or at least recent history has proven, he's a better coach. He's a better coach with doing more with less. When he was probably, when he had his most talented team, when he was coaching that team with Brock Purdy, Breece Hall, Charlie Kohler was a tight end.
Yeah.
He had another tight end that played. I mean, they were loaded on that team. They were loaded, man. That team was really good. And everybody was actually, people were projecting and predicting they would make the college football playoff. And now they win the Big 12 to make the playoff. That team underachieved. Like, it was, I mean, Brock Purdy regressed. And look what Brock Purdy became after he left. Like, the whole team regressed. And I know they end up beating Texas in one of those teams. So don't throw that in my face. I get that. But that team was capable and was predicted and projected to be one of the best teams in the country. And they underachieved. Because ultimately, Matt Campbell's one of those coaches. And I think Tom Herman's got some of this in him, too. Some coaches, they are better as underdogs. And they're better with doing more with less. And when you give them more, somehow they do less with it. You know what I mean? It's weird. And Tom Herman was kind of like that, too. Tom Herman was great as the underdog. Remember him as the underdog? Remember Texas' record with Tom Herman as the underdog? He was awesome. And then when Texas was a favorite, when they were expected to win, sometimes Texas would underachieve when they were expected to win. He had a tough time coaching his teams to win the games they were supposed to. But they were always ready to win the games when everybody counted them out. And it's always kind of in the psychology of their coaching. I think there's some of that in Matt Campbell. To the point of the person who made the comment on X, they may be right. Because nobody is expecting anything out of Iowa State right now.
Yeah.
And that's usually when they're at their most dangerous. When everybody predicted them to be a college football playoff contender and win the Big 12, I mean, I don't know. That team won like 7 games or something. I mean, that team horribly underachieved, considering all the talent. Breece Hall in the league now. That's the most talented Iowa State team they ever had, arguably.
Yeah.
Like, ever.
No, they definitely did. But that's kind of the question right now that I was talking to some Alabama people, and that's the question with Kalen DeBoer. Is Kalen DeBoer, can he coach all the 5 stars and big talent at Alabama, or was it the fact that he constantly had underdogs and was able to push teams that weren't supposed to be the champions and weren't supposed to be these great teams to be great, and he's done it over and over and over again. But now he has finally gotten to the point where he's got the best players. Is he going to be able to keep winning at Alabama?
Yeah. I mean, some people, yeah. That's something I brought up with about Kalen DeBoer, too. I agree. But, you know, I think he's got a better chance than – just because of where Nick Saban left the program. I mean, they literally were in the
I agree. I think he will. I'm just saying, if we're talking about coaches that have had that, the one that we're going to watch this season is Kalen DeBoer, of coach who has been extremely successful in underdog situations and now is no longer the underdog. But I guess he's going to say he is because they're projected to finish, what, third or fourth in the SEC this year?
Yeah, he's going to use that following Nick Saban. He's going to use it. Kalen DeBoer is just such a damn good coach. Oh, yeah. But, yeah, I agree. I think that's why he's proven he's a good coach, because he's been able to do more with less. Washington didn't even have – not even 50% of that roster were blue-chip players. They had almost as many three-stars on that roster as blue-chip players. I mean, that's just something you don't even see. They were close to being – they were close to being 50% of their roster being like three stars. They didn't even register on the blue chip ratio. Blue chip ratio is when you have at least 50% of your roster are 4- and 5-star recruits. They didn't even register.
Yeah.
It's remarkable what Kalen DeBoer did there. But he's been doing that everywhere he's gone. I mean, he's just been a guy that wins everywhere he goes. But it's one of those things. Like I said, you're right about Iowa State, though. I'll agree with the person about that. I've always said that about Matt Campbell. That's when his teams are at their most dangerous, when nobody is thinking. Even last year, I want to say, didn't they make a bowl game last year? Was that last year or 2 years ago? Nobody expected to make a bowl game. That was last year. Remember last year they had injuries and Matt Campbell was melting down. He was going after a fan. Remember he went after a fan? You remember this?
Oh, like Matt Campbell. Yeah.
He went after a fan. Like, that's how bad it got. Like, he went after a fan. I remember then I was like, man, it's really getting bad there at Iowa State. And Matt Campbell was a guy at one point they were considering him for the Detroit Lions job. He's one of those guys that stayed at Iowa State too long. Like, he should have cashed that lottery ticket a while ago. Yes. And he stayed there. He's a damn good coach, but he stayed there a little too long, and now the shine is kind of worn off of him. But I remember when they were early in the season, they were struggling. Yeah, they lost to Ohio. They lost to Ohio early. Early on, they were 2-3. Right after that Oklahoma game in their first five games, and people were saying, oh, man, they may not even make a bowl game. And then they beat TCU, they beat Cincinnati, they beat Baylor.
Beat Oklahoma State.
Yeah, you're right.
Beat K-State.
They beat Oklahoma State. I forget. I didn't even look. Yeah, you're right. So when everybody counts them out, when nobody's looking at them, that's when they make the most noise. So the person who brought that up, they may be wrong to something there. I haven't looked at Iowa State this season, though. But I do love me some Matt Campbell, and I love John Haycock.
Yeah.
I think John Haycock is one of the best defensive minds in all of college football. All right, good stuff there. And it's time for the Big Fat Poll today. Go let it be known who you think is going to win the Big 12 with Big 12 Media Days happening down there in Las Vegas. I chose Utah, but Utah and Oklahoma State are my picks because they are two of the four teams, and Texas is also in this category, along with Ole Miss, who return head coach, OC, DC, the strength and conditioning coach, special teams coordinator, and a multi-year starting quarterback. And I'll take Utah and I'll take Oklahoma State on that one. And Gundy's just a hell of a coach. All right, we've got to get into a Quinn Ewers discussion. We'll talk about Quinn Ewers and his EA Sports College Football video game rating. And we'll also talk about the attendees who have been announced for Texas, representing Texas at SEC Media Days. We'll get into both of those topics. But first, let's get updated, educated, and informed on all the top stories of the day with Patrick Davis and the Horn Headlines.
All right, your Horn Headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment. In the MLB, the Astros send Ronyel Blanco to the mound tonight, beginning their series with the Florida Marlins. The Marlins are currently on a 6-game home win streak, while the Astros have ridden a hot streak to within 2 games of the lead in the AL West. The Astros will still have to deal with two star players, Kyle Tucker and Justin Verlander, being out a little longer, as new reports indicate that both players will not be able to return until after the All-Star break. And the Rangers won their 4 straight with a 9-4 win over the Angels. John Gray weathered a 3-run second inning to pick up his 4th win of the season, as the Rangers came back strong with 5 runs in the 4th. Corey Seager and Wyatt Langford both homered in the game, with Seager extending his hit streak to 13 games. Max Scherzer gets a start tonight, with the Rangers looking to start a run beginning the second half of the season. And that is your Horn Headlines.
Horn Headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment. Grass is growing and yards need mowing. We got deep discounts on Gravely, Toro, Hustler, and Steel zero-turn mowers this month at Top Gun. TopGun.net. We'll shoot you straight.
All right, thank you for the horn headlines, Patrick. We appreciate those. All right, let's get to the Texas Longhorn conversation here. I saw yesterday that it was announced who will be attending SEC Media Days for the Longhorns. Of course, Sark representing as the head coach, but Quinn Ewers is going to make the trip down to Dallas for SEC Media Days for Texas. Kelvin Banks Jr., no surprise there. Both of those guys projected to be first-round picks for Texas coming up this upcoming draft. And Jahde Barron is also making the trip. Quinn Ewers is considered the second-best quarterback in the country right now based on preseason projections behind Carson Beck. Also, Kelvin Banks is considered one of the top two tackles, offensive tackles in college football right now. It's he and Campbell from LSU, I think, are in that conversation. Matter of fact, Matt Miller, the Matt Miller way too early draft that we just saw early last week. Yes, he had Kelvin Banks going fifth overall, had him ahead of Will Campbell, actually, as the first tackle taken in the draft. He had Quinn Ewers going 10th overall in the 2025 mock draft for him. Third quarterback taken behind Carson Beck going number one overall, and Shedeur Sanders going number two overall. So, I mean, makes sense. That's a no-brainer, Quinn and Kelvin Banks. Jahde Barron, to me, also a no-brainer. I think people really underestimate Jahde Barron. And, last season, there was, I think, a drop-off in his consistency as a player. But still, last season, he led the Big 12 DBs in yards per coverage snap, 0.2. And he led in defensive stops in coverage with 17 and allowed zero touchdowns. So even though he wasn't as consistent as he was and I think wasn't as impactful as he was in 2022, He still was really solid and really good. And he was dealing with some injuries, so it was a little inconsistent. But the truth is, his 2022 season, it was just one of the best seasons I've seen from a Texas defensive back in the last 10, 15 years at DBU. And I know I'm not exaggerating here either. I got the numbers to back it up. His coverage grade up until that point last season was 82. He had a 64 passer rating allowed in 2022, zero touchdowns allowed. He was the only DB since 2000 to register double-digit tackles for loss, fumble return for a touchdown, and an interception return for a touchdown in the same season. He led the Big 12 in defensive stops that season with 36. Also led all Power 5 defensive backs in stops in pass coverage with 24, wasn't even all conference, which still don't understand. He also was great at blitzing. He ranked second among Big 12 DBs in pass rush grade that season and was one of just three DBs in the conference to register multiple sacks. He ranked fifth among Big 12 DBs, allowing just 3.75 yards after the catch per reception, and led all Power 5 DBs that season in 2022 in yards per catch in coverage, which is 5.6 yards per catch allowed in coverage. Of all the DBs in the Power 5 that were targeted more than 40 times in slot coverage last season, he was the only one to allow fewer than 5 yards after the catch. Sorry, this is 2022 in that season, to allow fewer than 5 yards after the catch per reception and zero touchdowns. And my favorite stat that I found, he was the first Texas defensive back to have at least 11.5 tackles for loss in a season since 1978. I had to go back to Ricky Churchman to find a Texas DB that had that many tackles for loss in a season. You just don't see it like he had in 2022. He was also top 10 in havoc plays per game among Big 12 defenders. Like havoc plays period per game in 2022. I have no idea how he did make all conference that year. But in 2023, there was a little bit of drop off because I always say he's a football investigator, and he's really great at gathering and deciphering clues that the offense is presenting to him. Alignment, formation, personnel grouping. He's great at film study. He says he wants to be a defensive coordinator when he's done with football. So he's deep into the film study, being a student of the game, being a football theorist. And when he gathers these clues pre-snap, the formation, the personnel grouping, the alignment of the receiver, who he's facing, down, distance, he's able to process them really quickly and then narrow down the possibilities of how the offense is going to try to attack you. And in addition to that, because I used to do that too, I went through that same process, so I recognize it in him myself. But he's got something that I didn't have. But he's got a lot of things I didn't have. He got better hands, number one. But he doesn't have fear. I played with a proper amount of fear. You know, because when I would narrow down the possibilities of how an offense wants to attack me, and I'd narrow it down to two or three plays, fear would keep me from totally acting and going all in on that guesstimation, right? I would think, okay, so they're going to, out of this formation, this down and distance, they like the double slant. But what if they go slant and go? Or what if, you know, what if it's a slant six route, or what if they give me with a whip route and they act like they're going to slant, they go out and I go underneath and the guy's wide open. I would, you know, so I'd basically, you know, I'd think the worst case scenario oftentimes.
Yeah. You would often give them too much credit?
I would. I'd give them too much credit. But also I, you know, like I said, what if I was wrong? I didn't give myself enough credit. Is what it was.
Yeah,
What if I was wrong? What if I'm wrong in me making this, you know, this guess? And what if I, you know, miss it? And I cut it, and shoulder, and the quarterback throws it to the upfield shoulder, and I'm underneath, and the guy runs for, you know, an explosive play. I would think worst case scenario, so that fear would keep me from totally jumping that route or acting on all the information that I had gathered, all the data that I had gathered, all the intel. He doesn't have that fear. He doesn't operate with fear. He's a fearless defender. He's a fearless football investigator. And that, I think, is what helps him, you know, collapse on those wide receiver screens and get tackles for loss when he sees, you know, a running back swing screen or a smoke route boy wide receiver or any quick game. He acts without any fear and no hesitation. And that I love about his game. But, and I said this in 2022, I said it's going to get him in trouble, because at one point, coordinators, play callers, and play designers alike are going to look at how aggressive he is, and they're going to use that aggression against him. And that's what they did in 2023 toward the end of the season, whether it be TCU or whether it be Oklahoma State or even Washington. They would present him with false keys. He's so great at deciphering clues and acting on him. Let's give him false clues. Let's give him false keys. Let's give him counter keys. So they use double moves. They use out and ups. They use stalk, block, and go, and all of these things that test his eye discipline. And right, that occupy his eyes in different ways, and at times he would fail those tests. I think now he is going to evolve his game to put some safeguards within his game. So when you are going to take those chances like he does a lot and act on your investigative all right, your investigative techniques and deciphering all these clues, you know, you can still jump that route, but why don't you jump it on the outside or the upfield shoulder instead of jumping it and cutting underneath it, right? There are ways that your technique and your fundamentals will safeguard you against giving up the big play in case you are wrong or in case, you know, it's flawed logic, whatever you were thinking. So I think that's what he's going to have to pretty much infuse in his game, and there's no doubt he will. And that'll make him a much better player in 2024. But I don't want him to lose that fearlessness. That's what got him the pick in the Alabama game. This is why Sark loves him. He got the pick in the Alabama game. Even he said it. He said, I baited him. I went back and looked at the transcript of his post game, and he says clearly, I baited him, when he was talking about Jalen Milroe. And Jalen Milroe throwing that pick to him and what he was looking at. Here's the quote here. He said, yeah, I kind of baited him. He said, I wrote down in my notebook that week after watching film, steal on that particular concept. He said he didn't expect Alabama to run the play so early, settling and setting up Jalen Milroe and offensive coordinator Tommy Rees. But he said, yeah, I kind of baited him. I knew they were going to run their play. He thought they were going to run it late in the game. Essentially, the quarterback's reading him. They line up with three receivers to that side, counting from the outside in. Number one runs the nine route. Number two and three run quick outs. Quarterback is reading him. If he drifts back, with the nine route. If he drifts back with the nine route, quarterback's going to throw the underneath. He's going to throw the quick out to the number three receiver because that's the space that's been cleared because Jahde Barron has decided that he's going to drop back, right, to sink back. So what he did was fake like he was going to sink. All right, the chess match within the game. He faked like he was going to sink back. That automatic key for Jalen Milroe is, oh, Jahde Barron sinks, I throw underneath to number three. If Jahde Barron takes the number two receiver, so he goes to the quick out with number two, with the number two receiver, then that'll clear the route for the one-on-one with the number one receiver up top. And then I can throw either a curl route, sometimes a quick in route, quick dig route. There'll be an opening. But Jahde Barron faked him out, faked like he was going to drop. That means the out route was going to be open. And then he even talks about adjusting his alignment. You go watch him. He's playing outside leverage initially. And then on that play, when he recognizes the formation and he recognizes, you know, the personnel grouping and starts to decipher those clues, he shifts inside like a half a step or just a couple of steps. And he shifts inside just so he can cheat and get a little bit closer to his work. It was brilliant. And that was the first big play of the Alabama game. And from then on, Texas had momentum and they had confidence. And that's why Sark is a big Jahde Barron fan, because that guy plays with a fearlessness that everybody admires. I admire it because I didn't have it. And he's also probably the reason you win the U of H game. Speaking of fearlessness, that also, you know, that fearless approach, it also translates to him and his leadership. And that U of H game, he didn't play in the first half. He warmed up. They decided, no, you're not going to go. You're injured. Him and Ryan Watts, I believe, were injured as well in that game. He didn't play in the first half. And then Texas, they're up 21 points. Things get really tight. And in the second half, he decides, all right, you know what? I'm going in. I'm only at 65, 70%, but my team needs me. And me at 70%, I'm still better than the guys out there at 95%. And could me going out there being hurt and injured, could it hurt my draft stock? Because I could go out there and embarrass myself. I could go out there and give up the big play. I could go out there and give up the game-winning touchdown to Oklahoma because I'm only to U of H because I'm only 70%. But none of that interests mine because he doesn't think he's not a fear-based player. He didn't come at it from all the other ways it could go wrong, and it could have gone wrong a number of ways. He came at it from my team needs me. I'm the best option to help win the game, and he goes in the game, and he has a PBU on 4th-and-1 and has the game-saving play for Texas and helps them win the U of H game because he didn't operate from fear. If he'd been operating from fear, he'd have been like, well, I go in there, I may re-injure myself, then I'm out for the season. I could go in there and give up the touchdown because I'm hurt. That guy's 90%. I'm 70%. You know, that I'm not as good of a player right now. I could go in there and hurt my draft stock. I could go in there and make a fool of myself because I'm injured and, you know, I could end up being on a highlight reel for SportsCenter. None of that entered his mind. All he cared about and all he knew was my team needs me and I'm the best option. There's a fearlessness to Jahde Barron in this game that I appreciate. All right, there you go. Jahde Barron appreciation moment there for those who didn't know. But also Kelvin Banks. Kelvin Banks is just a stud. Remember his freshman year where he played four first-round wide? They were drafted that year. He played Texas Tech, and it was a Tyke Smith, I believe was his name. I could get that wrong. But he was drafted in the first round. They had Anudike Uzoma was a first-round pick. Will Anderson was a first-round pick. I believe it's Will McDonald from Iowa State was a first-round pick. The guy faced four first-round picks that year and allowed one sack to all those guys. So he's been a stud ever since, you know, his freshman year. And no surprise that he'll probably be one of the top two tackles taken off the board. And Quinn Ewers. And we know Quinn is one of the top two quarterbacks in the country, came out as one of the highest-rated recruits in the history of modern recruiting. And we'll get to some of his actual evaluation from Darren Jeremiah. He's doing evals for the 2025 draft, and he did his Quinn Ewers breakdown. It's at NFL.com. We'll give you some of the tidbits from that coming up when we go behind the burnt orange curtain. But his EA Sports video game rating leaked out yesterday. So here are the details from his EA Sports video game rating that leaked out. And I don't think these are all the details, but these are some of the main details. So his overall score is 92, pretty damn good. Probably won't be the highest score in the game. I wonder if it'll be the highest rated quarterback. Maybe Carson Beck will be a little bit higher. Maybe Shedeur Sanders will be higher. He's got an 81 speed, a little bit higher the speed than I thought, probably based on last year and his ability to scramble a little bit more than people expected. His break sack ability, which is kind of his sack avoidance, is 68. That's relatively low, but we talk about that all the time. Sack avoidance becoming a big term in evaluation now, a big data point in evaluation these days. His throw under pressure is 90. That says that he handles pressure relatively well, at least can make the throws under pressure relatively well. They didn't have arm strength listed, but I'm sure when you get on the game, they definitely got to have arm strength on it. That's something you always see. His arm strength probably would be one of the highest, if not the highest, in the game, too. I also saw on the game, they have all the celebrations listed now that you can go through as a player. So here are some of these celebrations. I don't even know what half of these are. So there's the touchdown celebrations are here you could do. Yeah, you can do your vibes. Not really sure what that is. Shoot the arrow. I know what that is. Jacked. I'm not sure what jacked is.
Ice in my veins.
I know what that is.
That's is jacked like flexing thing?
Maybe. Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe jacked is like I'm jacked up kind of thing. I could that. There's a tiger swag. I don't know what that is. That might be like some LSU thing. I can't hear you. We care. To the crowd, I think.
Yeah.
When you score a touchdown, you can do it. I can't hear you. Strike a pose. Okay. I think we can be self-explanatory there. Touchdown. Who cares? All right. There's the cross up. I think that's a little dance that some of the guys do. I could be wrong about that. It's a TD. Another touchdown celebration. It's time. So you can kind of point to your watch there. You can do the head swing. With the head swag, the wave goodbye, pretty simple. There's also the little baby. I imagine that's kind of when they do they rock the little baby.
That's my guess.
Like the football. TD. Someone says on his head. I guess is another celebration that you could do there too. Put him to sleep. Yeah, I've seen this one. I think this is when they do the sleep motion. Put him to sleep. Point to fans. You can just point to fans. You can come at me, bro. I guess that's, I don't know, just kind of patting that, come at me, bro, whatever. There's a mic drop. You can do that celebration. There's this is only for Colorado. Colorado only. Salute or show the ice. So yeah, I guess, because I think he wears jewelry sometime in the game. So you can, like, show the jewelry that you're wearing in the game. If you're Shedeur Sanders, pretty good. He's got his own. That's like, you ever think Colorado was going to be good? Guys, they got their own damn celebration in the game. Colorado only. They didn't make a bowl game last year. They got their own damn celebration in the game, guys. They going to make them good. That's why they're a top 20 team in the game. Come on, man. They know y'all want to play with them. First down celebration, they got to signal it. They got to touch them up. They got to jack. So I think you're right. Jack must be like flexing. First down celebration, a shake it off. They got an interception celebration, wave goodbye interception, why you throwing my way celebration, and a strapped interception. Oh, that's also head swag interception celebration. So they got the celebrations down. Got a lot of different celebrations you can do. There you go. But no horns down. Remember, no horns down in the game. But still, I think it's stupid. Don't make any sense at all. Horns down should be in the game because it's a part of college football. What are we doing here, man? What are we doing? Like, that makes no – they did, and they were on the preview. They did a preview video on social media.
Yeah,
talking
about
how realistic the game was and how realism was their – that was their top priority, emphasizing realism and how realistic things have to be. I'm like, and you didn't want to put the horns down there? You're talking about realism? Like, what do you – it's every time Texas plays. And they played – it was Texas and Michigan. They used a Texas-Michigan preview and didn't even show the horns down at all. I'm like, that's not realistic then. When Texas plays Michigan, there's going to be horns down all over the damn place, everywhere. It's crazy, man. So, anyway, I know, Longhorn fans, what a strange world we live in, where Longhorn fans now have to advocate and argue for horns down to be more prominent. It's like, what world are we living in? How do we come here? How do we get here? Where now me, a diehard lifetime Longhorn who bleeds the burn orange, sweat, tears, and blood, all right, gave it all up for this program, and yes, offended by the horns down. But once, actually at one point, I was penalized for doing the horns up in a game. That is a true story, in the Tulane game. How did we get here where now Longhorn fans are advocating and arguing for the horns down to be put in the video game? Strange times.
Strange times. Well, no one likes being called soft. They're just trying to call us soft. And we're like, we ain't soft.
You're soft.
Making us soft.
Put it in the game. Yeah, so just put it in the game, man. I want to see it. You're right. I think that's maybe what it is, because I think they attribute that to Longhorn fans, that they're the reason that they don't want it in the game, because they're snowflakes and cupcakes, and that's not true at all. All right, let's get to the we'll get to behind the burnt orange curtain. We got to talk Quinn Ewers. Quinn Ewers was the subject of Daniel Jeremiah's latest draft evaluation. I'll give you all of the other tidbits and nuggets from there, and we'll discuss how Quinn Ewers can go from being just a first-round prospect to being the number one quarterback on the board. Daniel Jeremiah likes Quinn Ewers. I'll tell you why when we come back right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers coming back on the Horn.
And they were all asking themselves the same question. What is behind that curtain?
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Time to get into some Texas football conversation. Go behind the burnt orange curtain here. I want to talk about Daniel Jeremiah's draft evaluation. He's doing kind of first looks, early looks at some of the top 2025 draft prospects coming out. And, of course, quarterbacks is where he's starting. And he's on Quinn Ewers. And here's what he liked about Quinn Ewers. He said, I love Ewers' urgency and tempo in the pocket. He has very quick feet as he sets up, and he can slide laterally or climb vertically to avoid free rushers. He has a quick three-quarters release point, and the ball really pops out of his hand without much strain or effort. He throws with anticipation in the middle of the field, and he can generate plenty of velocity to fit throws into tight windows. He excels on RPOs because of his quick hands and decision-making. He says he threw some beautiful deep balls against Alabama last season, but there were times in other games I studied when he put a little too much air under the ball, allowing defenders time to recover. Where he needs to improve, he says, I love how quickly Ewers sees the field, but there are times where his feet can be late to marry his eyes, which impacts his accuracy. For example, he'll start a read to the right, quickly get his eyes back to the middle of the field, and deliver the ball before aligning his feet in that direction. He overcomes it occasionally, but it should be an area of focus as he embarks on the 2024 season. He also has a bad habit of unnecessarily fading away and falling off some throws. Fortunately, he possesses the arm strength to get away with it at Texas, but this will be a risky proposition at the next level where the speed drastically increases. He ends it by saying, I don't know why Ewers hasn't generated more early excitement and buzz in scouting circles. I was very impressed with his skill set. His performance against Alabama last fall should have answered any questions about his viability as a top NFL prospect. He said he can make every throw from the pocket. He's accurate on the move, and he can take the free yards that are offered in the run game. So he likes Quinn Ewers. He also goes on to say he can't wait to watch him play at A&M. Sidebar says it's tough to top the Texas OU game, but I do believe this matchup will eclipse it this fall. So that's Daniel Jeremiah saying he thinks Texas A&M is going to be bigger than Texas OU this year. And by the way, I've said that all season long. I think this year specifically is the year where it'll be bigger than the Texas OU game, just because of the rekindling the rivalry and all the off-season drama going on between Texas and Texas A&M. By the way, Paul Feinbaum also agrees. But I digress. Getting back to it, Quinn Ewers. So, and one thing he talks about, too, is the quick hands with the RPO game. Sark talks about the traits he looks for in a quarterback: accuracy, number one, and then quick hands, because of them being able to manipulate the mesh point. He wants guys who have great sleight of hand, because the deception-based passing game that he has, play-action pass, RPOs, you want a quarterback that has those quick hands that can throw off platform, different freaky arm angles that you have to adjust to in the RPO game, and Quinn can certainly do that, and it looks effortless, actually, when Quinn's doing it. So that actually is something that tracks even from when Sark is identifying traits that he covets at the quarterback position. But things that he needs to improve on, he brought up the deep ball, and the deep ball, the truth is, it's overblown now. What happened was that after the combine, after A.D. Mitchell and Xavier Roy, they had such impressive combines, everybody went back to the tape in the film and went back to the data science, and they wondered to themselves, why in the hell isn't Texas completing more deep passes downfield when you look at how great their wide receiving core is. You had three guys get drafted, and two of them ran some of the fastest times, and one ran the fastest time in the history of the combine. And so they went back to the stats and found that basically you go look at the adjusted – you go look at the completion percentage on 20-plus yard throws for Quinn last season, 33%, which is a little bit below average. That was 76th in the FBS. If you go look at his – Xavier Worthy's off-target rate on throws, he was at 22.4% off-target rate. That was the highest for any receiver in this wide receiving class. Worthy also 9.2 yards per target on average on deep passes. That was the worst of any projected non-undrafted free agent Power 5 receiver in that 2024 draft class. And his 94 deep targets in his career only had a 25% completion rate. And that was one of the lowest rates for a receiver in that draft class. So Xavier Worthy, everybody wondered, man, why wasn't he more of a deep threat and a more efficient, effective deep threat? And the blame was pretty much heaped on and Quinn Ewers. And if you go look at it, the last seven starts, though, he's actually gotten a lot better. A lot better. 43 his last seven starts, this is on deep balls, 20-plus yards or more. 43% completion percentage. Prior to that, it was the previous 15 starts, I should say, he was at 24% completion percentage on 20-plus yard passes. Yards per attempt, 14.8 yards per attempt on 20-plus yard passes. Last seven starts, the previous 15 starts before that, it was at 7.9. His 25% off-target rate in the last seven games on 20-plus yard throws is much better than the 44% off-target rate that he had on such throws in the previous 15 starts. So last seven starts, he's been much more accurate. 92 QBR in the last seven starts on 20-plus yard throws. That number was his QBR overall was at 23 on 20-plus yard throws in his previous 15 starts. So he's much better. And I think he will continue to get better, too, on the deep ball. I'm not worried about the deep ball. I'm much more concerned about the way he handles pressure. We talked about this. I mean, Quinn Ewers versus – you go look at him versus pressure, pressure to sack rate. 20.7 overall, which is not terrible, but very different in 2022. 13.9% pressure to sack rate. 2023, 25%. That's very different. 2022 allowed pressure percentage, he's at 14%. That's a good number. But then in 2023, that number rises to 22%. So that is the concern, is that when Quinn Ewers is dealing with pressure, which Quinn do you get? Do you get the Quinn that handles pressure really well, or the Quinn that panics a bit when he has to deal with pressure? And so that, I think, that's something he's got to answer. He's also got to be able to get deeper into his progressions. And the pressure, that's all connected, because I think he sees the pressure, literally stares at it. And I think that's what caused him to scramble a lot last year, instead of feeling that pressure and then being able to manipulate and create space in the pocket and become a better pocket scientist. That's what they want. So they want to get through the progressions quicker and also get deeper into the progressions. And I think one will help the other. If he gets through them quicker, it'll help him get deeper into the progressions before the pressure gets there. But then when the pressure even is barreling down on you, you want to feel that pressure like Michael Penix did last year and not see that pressure. Because you see it, that means you're not looking downfield at your progressions and the route combinations. That means you're looking at the pressure. That's going to cause you to abandon that pocket rather than try to step up in the pocket and maneuver in the pocket. So that's what I think they want to see from him too. And they also want to see him in straight dropback situations. That's more Sark's offense. Sark's offense, 65% of it is screens, play action pass, and RPO passes. So that small sliver of 35%, that third of the passing game, they really want to see him execute straight dropback situations, because that's a lot of what the NFL is in those straight dropback situations. And I think lastly, they want to see him against Michigan, against Georgia, and against A&M, as Daniel Jeremiah just said, against Oklahoma, big games on big stages. They want to see him put the cape on. I always say the capability, right? Put the cape on and come rescue your team if necessary with a game-winning drive, with a fourth-quarter comeback. I believe I have him 6-5 in game-winning drive and or fourth-quarter comeback opportunities, which is a really good and respectable record. This season, though, when he's in those close game situations, Texas 3-2, in one score games last year, they were, I believe, 3-2 in those one score games. Maybe this year you want them 5-0. And the reason they 5-0 is because Quinn engineers a game winning drive, engineers a fourth quarter comeback in one of those big games against Michigan, Oklahoma, Texas A&M, against Georgia. That's what they want to see. And they saw it from a Caleb Williams. And once you saw it from a Joe Burrow, and once you see it, it's hard for scouts not to be infatuated with that je ne sais quoi, with that it quality that you want, that certain quarterbacks have and certain quarterbacks don't, that clutch gene. And I think they want to see that Quinn has that. We know he's got all the raw materials and the physical tools. He's got all of that. All the stuff that I talked about him needing to improve on, getting to progressions quicker, handling pressure a little bit better, the deep ball, that'll all happen in time. But the it quality, that thing you cannot teach, they want to know that he has that. And we've seen it flash, but they want to see him, like I said, put the cape on, the capability. And I think that's the other thing scouts will want to document in their notes, in their evals, in their data points about Quinn Ewers, because we hadn't quite seen it consistently yet. And I think it'll be a good chance this year with, you know, losing Xavier Worthy and JT Sanders and Jonathan Brooks. I mean, this is Quinn's offense. This is Quinn's team. It wasn't Quinn's team last year, really. That was, you know, that was more about Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy and X-Man and, you know, JT Sanders and all of these, you know, these different great skill position guys. Even Jay Witt was considered, you know, probably more of a leader on that team. And, you know, you had a lot of great leadership on that team. Jalen Ford was a great leader. This team, though, feels like Quinn's team. The team before that was Bijan and Rojo's team. Last year, it seemed like it was other guys who were supplying that much-needed leadership. He's in a natural leadership position, but I don't think he's had the burden, really, of leadership yet, of being that guy that everybody looks to set the example constantly and be, you know, the tallest guy in the room and have to be a vocal leader, which we know he's not necessarily comfortable with. And they don't really have that culture bearer like a Jay Witt and a Rojo like they had. This is Quinn's team. And scouts want to see how Quinn's team does this year, first year in the SEC, and how he conducts himself, you know, when they face adversity and the team looking to him and how he handles that different leadership role. So, a lot on Quinn's plate, but I definitely think Quinn can handle it. All right, we come back. We got off the record on the other side. Off the record, this is this story actually is going to be interesting. I got a couple of stories that I want to get into, but this one has to do with a love triangle that's gone crazy and honestly probably needs to be a documentary of some kind. It is sports related, and we'll give you some of the details about this when we come back. All that and more right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers coming back on the horn.
D.D. Mega Doodoo, I'm sorry, Mangoodoo.
Once it's turned on, the sign will spell out Deli Cat Essen.
Well, I don't get a brain bag comb.
Well, congratulations. Continue good sex in the Big East.
Thank you, Jimmy.
And boom goes the dynamite.
It's time for another edition of Off the Record.
Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. F***ing thing sucks.
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Time to get into a little off the record here. So, I got this from TMZ. So I'm trying to sort through it for you here. So Zach Wilson just recently got engaged. His ex, Abby Gowell, I believe is her name, also got engaged. She's engaged, Zach Wilson's ex, to Zach Wilson's former college roommate. His ex, Abby, dated the, yeah, she dated Zach Wilson from high school until 2022. And they broke up. Remember, the rumor was they broke up because Zach Wilson was hitting on dudes as moms. Like, he was hitting on MILFs.
Yeah.
That was the rumor, if you don't recall. And then, like I said, it got ugly, apparently, because, like I said, it was all rumor. But apparently, this young lady, his ex, Abby, she is now engaged to his former roommate. She started dating Dax Milne. That was BYU's. They were teammates, obviously, when he was at BYU. And apparently they were also friends, like childhood friends, too. So they basically labeled her a homie hopper, I believe, at the time. Stated that, you know, she was, you know, obviously hopping from dude to dude. That was not the case. And remember, the rumors were never confirmed that Zach Wilson was having inappropriate relationships with his friends' moms, but that was the rumor. And the rumor was she was trying to get back at him by dating his roommate. Well, now they've gone past any type of revenge factor because she's now engaged to Zach Wilson's former roommate and friend. And now Zach Wilson has moved on, and he's also engaged. There you go. And he's engaged to Nicolette Delano. She's a model, which is good for him. Zach Wilson. So he's engaged to a model, and his ex is engaged to his former roommate and former close friend.
This is
Dax
all.
Dax Milne is his name.
This is all a lot coming from people that went to BYU, right?
Yes, this is, yes, the honor code, folks. Yes, apparently. Yes, there you go.
That's what makes this really weird to me. This doesn't seem that crazy of, you know, college kids just not knowing what's up, and then you kind of find yourself a little bit later in life, and, you know, maybe Bill made some bad decisions when they were younger, and then hopefully it all works out. It's just weird when it's BYU because it feels like that's not what's supposed to be happening at BYU. Feels like they're trying to fight this kind of thing at BYU, right?
You would think, yeah. No, it's, I guess, and he's a receiver for Washington, I believe, right now, Dax Milne. So they're both in the league. Yeah, he's a receiver for Washington. Yeah, it is. It's messy. I don't know how he got that messy. So who's in violation here? Who's more in the wrong?
Who's more in the wrong?
The former friend and roommate more in the wrong for dating and now engaged to the ex? Or is the ex more in the wrong for dating the roommate out of revenge, I think, initially, and then, hey, actually falling in love and now engaged to the former roommate? Are they both just equally wrong? Violation of the
G-code? Probably wrong, because odds would tell – history and my experience in life and all of this would tell you the roommate and the girl were together before any of other stuff happened. There was something already there. That would, okay. History would tell me of other relationships and things like this that normally, if you ever, okay. Because, you know, like when you go to see your friend's roommate or you either usually really like that person or you can't stand them. There very rarely is there like a middle ground of like somebody you have to see all the time that you didn't pick as a friend.
That's true.
You're like, that's your friend. That ain't my friend.
Yeah.
Or you're like, no, we're best friends now, too, because we get along really great. So I could believe that maybe there was already something happening on that side, and then everything went south. Then they're like, well, cool, we'll just keep hooking up because we were already cool.
Those are weird. Yeah, you're right. I don't know. And if the rumors about Zach Wilson are true, then they broke up because he cheated on her by having inappropriate relationships with MILFs and older moms.
Again.
Of people with older moms in their circle, like around with the group. Now, Zach Wilson's mom has denied this, saying, no, that's not true. But like I said, the rumors are rumors. I don't know. She would. I mean, if yours, I don't know what she would know. I have no idea. His mom is considered a MILF too. Who knows? I have no idea what's going on. This is sordid, like real some weird stuff going on here, man.
Man, MILFs and Mormons. Not what you expect. MILFs. Not what you expect.
MILFs and Mormons. That sounds like a great reality TV show. I would watch that TV show. MILFs and Mormons. You know what the worst reality TV show is on right now?
All of them.
Have you seen the MILF Manor show? The latest?
No.
Oh, dude. This is all-time disgusting, depraved, just deplorable behavior happening on this reality TV show. So the premise is they bring on a bunch of MILFs, and they bring on a bunch of young dudes who can hit on the MILFs. They call it MILF Manor.
Yeah.
This season, though, the latest season, somebody out there is watching, probably going to hit you up on the text line. They bring in the sons and the dads. And they're both hitting on the MILFs. They're hitting on the same women. The dad and the sons are there. Oh, it is some sick, twisted, kind of like this Mormon and MILFs type stuff going on. It just ain't, You can't even watch it without feeling bad about yourself and them too.
But it's all fake too, because they're all doing it because they want to be on TV.
I know, but why would
I don't get
they're like kissing the same women though. Like, is that worth it? Do I want to kiss the same woman my dad kissed? Do I need to be tonguing a woman down after my dad just did it, or vice versa? Who would want to do that?
But it's like,
who wants to do that?
When you just say, where did we go wrong as a country? And it's not a generation, because clearly MILFs and dads are doing this too. Every generation is involved. Everyone's involved in this world where, instead of being like, you know what, let me work hard and try and earn my way, they go, well, mom, son, would you like to go all have go make out on TV for everyone to realize that we're weird people, because that'll give us our 15 minutes of fame, and then we can go show up. I don't get what do you get out of that?
I don't. I did 15 minutes of fame. You're right. I mean, that's essentially.
But if that's the fame, right, is it worth it?
I don't think it is worth it, but for them, it is worth it. For them, they. I think we're in a society. I talked about this. The Kardashians, and I think Jerry Springer was probably one of the first, but the Kardashians really popularized the blueprint of turning shame into fame, and then the fame will lead to fortune. And that's the reality TV show blueprint, essentially.
It is.
That used to be something you'd be shamed for. You're like, I'd never show my face again if everybody knew me and my dad was kissing on the same woman. Right. It's like, no. Right. Now you can turn that shame, a sex tape, into fame, because remember, she wasn't even the most famous person in the sex tape. It was Ray J the most famous person in the sex tape, and then she turned that shame into fame, because everybody's like, sex tape, can't show your face again, you're just considered the whore of Babylon or whatever. She's like, no, shame into fame, and that fame into fortune.
Yeah,
and that is now a blueprint now, because we have no shame as a society.
Okay, but
we used to have shame, and now even in politics, there's no shame.
No.
Like that's why Donald Trump is the man, because Donald Trump has no shame. He's like y'all. The reason that y'all are behind on the new age of politics is because y'all still got shame about stuff y'all do. I have no shame. Got no shame. I'll tell it like I see it. No shame at all.
Let me ask you, what TV channel is this MILF Manor on?
Oh, that's a great.
Because
I know this. It's
This is already not.
It might be TLC. It might be TLC.
TLC is at least, but like, that's also, these people are like, well, I'm going to be on this TV. And you're like, you're going to be on Pop? You're going to get your fame and fortune off a TV channel that nobody knows what channel it is? Nobody knows where to find
it? Yes, it is. It's TLC. Man, TLC has put out some of the most deplorable entertainment material out there. It's supposed to be the learning channel.
The learning channel.
I Didn't Know I Was Pregnant on there. 90 Day Fiancé is on there. MILF Matters on there.
Yeah, Honey Boo Boo.
Honey Boo. And it's the learning channel. The learning channel to learn about the worst parts of us as a civilization. Oh,
good
man.
Good Lord.
Yeah. How'd you know Here Comes Honey Boo Boo comes on there? How'd you know that, Patrick?
Because
it's
a comedy staple, because it's a funny word to say.
They got a new one. I don't say they got a new one. Honey Boo Boo.
Do they?
Like, show. Yeah, it's a new one. Oh, yeah. Okay, here's the current programming for the Learning Channel.
Oh.
1,000-pound sisters, 7 little Johnstons, 90-day fiancé. By the way, I watched some of those, so I'm guilty of the 90. That's how I know about the MILF Manor, because it comes on right after the 90-day fiancé. I catch a little bit of it. They got like 8 90-day fiancés. Botched bariatrics, crack addicts, Dr. Pimple Popper, Doubling Down with Doricos, Little People, Big World. I heard that one's pretty good. Love in Translation, MILF Manor, My 600-Pound Life, My Big Fat Fabulous Life, My Strange Addiction. That one is weird, Strange Addiction. People like eat. They like eat like fabric softener and stuff. Like, it's just very strange. Outdaughtered. I don't know. Say Yes to the Dress, Sister Wives, Seeking Sister Wives. I think I watched that one too, Seeking Sister Wives. This is the Learning Channel. What the hell is going on?
And y'all get mad at me for watching Summer League. Better than that pile of garbage.
That is a pile of garbage. It is. But sometimes you got to take you need an escapism. You need to escape.
I don't want to escape to that. I don't want that to exist. I want to pretend that none of that exists.
The Discovery Channel is one of the last channels that's trying to hold on to what their true identity is. You know, Shark Week, as far as Naked and Afraid is as far as they go. They go Naked and Afraid, which still you do learn something. It's still Discovery Channel-esque.
Yeah.
But most like BET, I mean, it's Black Entertainment. They're not true to their identity anymore. They're doing Black History Month. They don't even really do anything. They don't do anything special. How you going to be Black Entertainment Television and not do anything special for Black History Month? No documentaries and nothing. Just still playing reality TV shows about the hip-hop wives and stuff? Come on.
She's more crazy. Tyler Perry.
That is Black History. All right, we come back. One more hour left in the show. We'll get into a discussion about the U.S. men's national team for the USA Olympic team for basketball. Who should start? Who should finish among that group? We'll also talk about CeeDee Lamb and the Dallas Cowboys. You would not believe how many Cowboys are on the last year of their contract. It has to be intentional. All that and more right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Babers coming back on the horn.